Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by the American Family Insurance Championship in Madison. Wisconsin's stop on the PGA Tour Champions is back June 10th through the 12th. That's next Friday through Sunday at University Ridge Golf Course in Madison, with full galleries and a full schedule, including the return of the Friday night concert at Bree Stevens Field, featuring country music group Lady A, with opening acts Boys to Men and Edwin McCain. Tickets for the concert and the tournament can be purchased at amfamchampionship.com. Since 2016, the AmFam Championship has raised more than $12.6 million for local charities distributed through the American Family Steve Stricker Foundation. Along with Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez here on a Friday. A short week since our last podcast. We'll get into more of Gary's weekend with the guys. What do we call that now? The Men to Boys Tour, right? That was what we – and that had some sticking power. Do you see that got on the headline last week?
Yeah, I saw that, yeah. Officially, Now We Go is the name of the group, but unofficially, Men to Boys fits it to a T, Rob.
All right. We'll get to that in a little bit, but it is the eve of AmFam Championship Week. It'll start with the 5K run on Sunday, I believe it is, out at the cross-country course at University Ridge to raise money for Carbone Cancer Center at the UW. But, Gary, here we are. I mean, we kind of have been waiting. The field is going to be announced later this afternoon. I believe at 5 o'clock Central Time is when the golfers have to commit. And we're anticipating many of the big names on the PGA Tour Champions will be there. I think the only one that I've heard that's not going to be there is Padraig Harrington. The European Ryder Cup team captain has played a lot, both on the regular tour and the PGA Tour Champions here stateside the first half of the year, but it's going back over to Europe to play now for a while. But still, I mean, with a 78-player field, you lose one. There's about eight other, big names that can slide right in there and take his place.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the field reveal, the announcement at 5 p.m. when the field is finalized. Rob, looking forward to see who gets all the sponsor exemptions. We know Mario's Tiziani is going to be in the field because Steve let that slip a couple weeks ago at a news conference. And Mario is playing this week in Iowa. Pretty good leaderboard over there in Iowa, Rob. And Jerry Kelly, it's very early going, but he's one shot off the lead. It's good to see him after, he's had two or three mediocre finishes, let's say, on the Champions Tour the last few starts. So hopefully he can get in gear and beat and defend his title.
Well, the thing that's really encouraging about Jerry is in his performance starting out today in Iowa is that, he struggled in the first rounds. He's kind of got behind the eight ball and then had to, rally from behind. And, we hear it. We've heard it ever since we really started to pay attention to the senior tour, to the level that we do with the AmFam Championship, and how it is a sprint, not a marathon. You've got to be ready to run right out of the blocks. And if you aren't, you're going to get lapped. And I think that's kind of been, Jerry's, issue. Now the PGA senior championship, the senior PGA championship, got off to a nice start with a 69, but then 72, 70, and 70. But the three tournaments before that, a 75 at the Insperity, a 76 at the Mitsubishi Electric Classic, and a 74 at the Regent's Tradition. And then really, came on strong, especially, last three rounds at the Regent's, but final rounds of both the Insperity and the Mitsubishi. And, I know he's a guy, Gary, that always seems to be working on something. And maybe he's found something here with, I'm sure he's, now that he's kind of back, in the Midwest, he's probably had a little time with Jim Schumann on the range.
Yeah, and that's a good point you make about getting off to fast starts, because if you shoot three or four over, two over in the first round, that means you have to shoot, basically 15 or 16 under on the weekend. And that's really hard to do, obviously, just to make up the ground on the leader, because the first round leader is going to shoot a bunch under. So that's a good point about getting off to a fast start in 54 hole tournaments. And it looks like Jerry's done that this week. He's birdied his second and fourth hole. So interesting to see how he finishes up in the Principal Charity Classic. Steve Stricker's on the course, even after a couple holes as we record our podcast. And Mario was just teeing off. So,
Yep. And so it all three guys will be in the field next week in Madison. Another one who I'm pretty sure will be in is Skip Kendall. I heard him doing a podcast with John Adias, local Madison, former Madison radio celebrity, now doing podcasts. Who can do a podcast? I don't know. How can you make it work with a podcast? I'm just kidding. But he had Skip on, and you know, and Skip not only comes back to play in the tournament, Gary, but he really gives a lot of his time in other activities and pro-ams and junior clinics during the week. And I think, you know, he really enjoys, you know, the just being able to be around the guys that he grew up competing against, both in Wisconsin with the three Madison guys and, you know, all those guys on the senior tour.
Yeah, it's a shame he didn't get full status in Champions Tour qualifying last year. Robbie came oh so close. Because, you know, a few years ago, he was talking about being burned out and he was leaving competitive golf, tournament golf, to focus on coaching. I think he's still doing some coaching, but I think, you know, he got the itch to play again and tried to qualify for the tour and didn't quite make it. I think he had a bad closing finish to his final round. So it's good to see him in the field. And you're right, he loves coming home and he loves interacting with the gallery. And of course, you know, a lot of people remember him from his time living in Fox Point and going to Nicolet High School and then playing in the GMO all those years.
And as we record the podcast, ding, 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 we should have a little bell in the background here, Gary, because Jerry Kelly just made a birdie on six to go to 3 under. And he's currently tied for the lead with Matt Gogel and Scott Verplank. And I bring up Matt Gogel and Scott Verplank. Matt Gogel has been on the Golf Channel as an on-course commentator for several years. And Scott Verplank, you know, has his surges of where he plays really well on the senior tour. And then he kind of goes quiet for a while. But in the big picture, as we look ahead to the AmFam Championship, Gary, to me, it's never been more difficult to pick a favorite to win the thing than it is this year. Obviously, Stephen Elker's playing well. We anticipate he'll be in that field release at 5 p.m. Friday. But, you know, it's not a given. There's so many guys that have really kind of, quote unquote, come out of nowhere. And I just don't know, you know, who you can put your, you know, finger on, because I don't even know if Elker's played University Ridge.
Yeah, you're right, Rob. It's virtually impossible almost to pick a favorite. I mean, a few years ago, you would have picked, you know, Bernhard Langer every week just because he was going to win his share. But Bernhard is still playing well, but he's not, you know, winning at the rate he once did. So with him slipping a little bit, it's really hard to pick somebody. You know, Jerry getting hot at the right time, you know, should he go on to have a good finish this week, you'd have to say he'd be certainly among the, at least the co-favorites next week.
And we've had a lot of guys that have battled injury the last couple of years. Mark Calcavecchia had COVID, and then he had spinal effusion surgery. And then Scott McCarron, former AmFam champ, that had the foot surgery last year and really knocked him back. And he's been a little bit slow to recover, but yet, you know, still a guy who's kept himself in good shape, hits the ball long by, you know, senior tour standards. You know, courses for horses, I get, you know, is he's always played well at University Ridge, and you would expect him to be in the mix. But, you know, the one thing about that senior tour, Gary, is these guys aren't getting any younger, much like all of the people that come out to watch the tournament. They're battling their share of injuries and ailments, too.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit, Robert. And, you know, when you get an injury when you're 54 years old, it's a lot different than getting injured when you're 28. The body just snaps back a lot quicker when you're younger. So all these guys are battling something at this stage in their careers, whether it's a back or hips or a neck or hands, elbows, shoulders. Everybody's got a, you know, something bugging them at this point. And I think that's why you see a guy like Scott Verplank. I know he's had some injury problems too, Rob. And
correct, yeah.
When he's feeling good, yeah, he sneaks up there on leaderboards. And on the weeks he's probably not feeling good or dealing with injuries, you know, guys like that slip down a way. So I think health is the biggest attribute you can have when you play Champions Tour golf.
Well, we will continue to monitor that. Gary, you were at Media Day a few weeks ago. You know, we're both looking forward to a full experience at the AmFam again. First time since 2019 that we'll see full galleries. The Saturday foursome will be in effect with Brett Favre and Andy North taking on Julie Inkster and Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter, by the way, just got on Twitter. So he'll be poised and ready to go with that. You know, I'm wondering, can we somehow leverage Derek Jeter getting on Twitter to get Andy North on Twitter? His wife Sue has been an avid supporter of all we do on, you know, through social media, especially on Twitter. I think with Derek Jeter getting on Twitter, I think the best celebrity foursome participant not on Twitter, obviously, Andy North, and we got to get him on there.
Yeah, let's twist his arm when he shows up next week for the celebrity foursome. Although I doubt that he just doesn't seem very interested in social media, which is probably smart, you know, probably a good thing in this day and age to stay off as much as possible. We have to do it because of our jobs. But to be honest, Rob, I don't know that I would tweet that much or go on Facebook that much if I wasn't posting your great golf stories, Dennis McCann stuff, or my stuff, retweeting it. Otherwise, I'm not sure I'd be on that much.
Yeah, and Andy, I asked him about it, like, boy, gosh, it must be, it feels like 10 years ago now. He was practicing out at Hawks Landing, and I asked him, when are you getting on Twitter? Your wife is so good at it. And he said, you know, that his role at ESPN really is, you know, he's got to watch himself. And I don't think he wanted to do anything, you know, and I'm with you. I don't think that, you know, he would have his iPhone out 24/7, you know, with his fingers on the keyboard. But, you know, again, you just never know when someone's going to take something the wrong way. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're having some explaining to do. And we're seeing a lot of people with a lot of explaining to do. So I applaud Andy for resisting the temptation. And we're able to converse with him through Sue sometimes on social media. And of course, you know, we see him a lot. We've seen him a lot lately, you know, on ESPN. You know, did a great job with the PGA Championship, and I'm sure we'll see him again with the U.S. Open coming up.
Yeah, and you know, as you know, Rob, Andy's a great interviewer. I just finished the book Phil by Alan Chipnuck, and Andy is quoted in there quite a bit when Alan tackles the subject of Phil Mickelson throwing Tom Watson under the bus at the Ryder Cup a few years back. And Andy had some great quotes in there. He's very engageable and very engaging and very quotable when he wants to be. And you know, still does a very good job as an analyst on TV.
Well, and I like that too. And you're right. I mean, he's really got a good perspective on the game of golf. I think as we look at the AmFam Championship, I'm hoping that we see David Duval at the AmFam this week and get a chance to maybe even talk to him. He always seems to have good perspective, especially on a lot of the stuff going on regarding the Saudi tour, which, you know, it seems whether it's the, you know, the U.S. Women's Open, the tournament going on, Jack's tournament this week at Memorial, and with the deal with Dustin Johnson, you know, committing to the first event, I think everybody's got their opinion on that, and I'm sure David Duval wouldn't hold back either in talking about that. There's some good perspectives out there as we look forward to next week. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people that are sort of shaking their head at you know, these guys that are jumping on the LIV bandwagon.
And coincidentally, Rob, that first Saudi tournament, the LIV golf tournament, is next week opposite the AmFam Championship. So that'll be a topic I think a lot of guys will be asked about. I know I plan to ask a lot of guys about, what would you do if you were 30 years old and the Saudis came calling? Would you jump? A lot of those guys, I think, are going to have very strong opinions, and I'm looking forward to talking to some of them about that.
Well, a question for you: how low does, or how high, you know, how does the Saudi group set the bar going forward? If you know, if this is the high watermark, do they start going after guys like a Freddie Couples or a, you know, and again, not saying any of these guys would do it, but you know, I'm sure there's some, you know, some international guys, you know, playing the PGA Tour champions that, you know, especially if they're in jeopardy of not having status. I mean, Stephen Elker is a great example. I mean, this guy can play. He had no status coming into the year. He's got it now because of his wins. And he's pretty much set now for probably a good 5 to 10 years, you would think. But, boy, you know, I mean, would they ever go after older golfers to help fill out these fields? I saw, you know, one of the we'll talk about the NCAA championship in a minute, but one of the guys from Arizona State is committed as an amateur, as is the U.S. amateur champion from Michigan State, James Piatt. And, you know, a lot of people may look sideways at that, but, you know, put yourself in their shoes once. I mean, they've got zero money and or minimal name, image, likeness money. and they need to get some base to be able to travel to get to the PGA Tour. And, you know, this, and this tour is coming after them. I this is going to be interesting on a lot of levels, the young guys, the old guys, and then of course the guys in the middle who initially were thought to be the ones that were going to fuel this, this tour until the PGA Tour came down hard with, you know, threats and warnings about what would happen if they did.
Yeah. My feeling, Rob, is that the Saudis are probably in this for the long haul. They're not going to give up after 1 or 2 years of sort of weak fields. And someone pointed out, I read a pretty good story that, you know, right now, the big names in golf, Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy, those guys are snubbing the Saudis and saying where our loyalty is with the PGA Tour. They've won majors on the PGA Tour. They're building legacies. But you're right. What about the young kids coming out of college? What about a Hunter Eichhorn or a Harrison Knott if the Saudis come and say, we'll give you $5 million to come over and play in our tournaments? Those guys have no status, you know, or minimal status on the PGA Tour Canada in some cases. And it's pretty hard to turn down that money. It really is when you have nothing.
Well, talking to, you know, some of those guys and then other guys that have come before them that have done the mini tour route and run into dead end after dead end. I mean, they're given no promises. You know, there's, you know, some kids in our part of the country, Gary, that would really benefit from even something as simple as a sponsor's exemption to last week's Korn Ferry Tour event in Illinois. I'm sure there were some Illinois natives that were given those, nobody from Wisconsin. Same with the John Deere Classic. You know, they've done, for the most part, you know, done pretty well by Jordan Niebuhr, Charlie Danielson, but you really haven't seen anybody since then get into the John Deere Classic. And that's one that, you know, with Claire Peterson running the show his final year, you know, he's aware of these guys, but, you know, he's got a lot of people knocking his door to get those exemptions. And so you're right, there is no promise. And I can see, you know, potentially that the PGA Tour is going to have to respond in that respect, Gary, because when I was at the NCAA championships last week, ran into our friend Chris Richards, who used to be a PGA Tour champions media official, now kind of orchestrating the PGA Tour University. And he, you know, recognizes that's a concept where, you know, these top five guys in the standings in their final year of eligibility go right to the Korn Ferry Tour. Well, I think I would see a situation where they're going to have to go right to the PGA Tour in order to counteract what the LIV Golf might end up doing to try to get in on the ground floor with some of these young guys. And whether or not this tour changes the world of golf, it's at least making the world of golf think about how it's organized.
For sure. And when you think of the politics involved, and when you think of what the Saudi regime has done to people and continues to do to people, atrocities, human rights, terrible record. But, you know, all that aside, it's easy for people to criticize people to go over there, but if you have no status, you're a young professional golfer or a struggling professional golfer, and someone you want to feed your family and someone dangles that kind of money in front of you, it's pretty hard to say no. I mean, you have to, that's the cold, hard truth. It's hard to say no to millions of dollars being thrown at you. And, you know, we can criticize the regime, Saudi regime, all we want, but when it comes down to a guy taking care of his family, that's a different story.
Yeah, and there will be a lot of feeding the family type stories that come out of this among the young guys. But I think to kind of put a bow on the Saudi talk, you know, the Dustin Johnson part of it, nobody can understand why you would chase money when you've made so much already. So now, you know, again, it's for him, it's two steps forward, one back. He takes the Saudi money for this first event, but then loses his RBC endorsement contract right away. And we saw that with Phil Mickelson too. He basically was, you know, his hat was wiped clean of any endorsements. KPMG gone, you know, everybody on his sleeve and in his collar gone. And there is a price to pay, but you know, with the kind of money that they're talking, no doubt about it, Gary. I mean, you're not talking about not only putting food on the tables, but for a guy like Dustin Johnson, you know, this might be the deal breaker where, you know, he can play as little or as much golf as he wants going forward, but he doesn't have to worry about how, you know, about his family and the next generation, you know, for a long, long time, because that's a lot of money. And I can't imagine, unless you're, you know, I can't imagine going through that much money in a lifetime. And that's some pretty serious coin that you can use to kind of set your family for life.
Yeah, you know, if the Saudis had offered Dustin Johnson $5 million, he says, I'm sure he says, no, thank you. Mm-hmm. I've got $100 million in the bank. But when you offer him $125 million, that's a whole different ballgame. That's the number that gets anybody's attention. And it's just hard to say no to that kind of money. Really interesting, you know, that the tour, you know, the PGA Tour can clamp down on the Robert Garrises and those guys who, you know, are journeymen and are going over there and it's probably no big deal in the long run. But when you start talking about sanctioning Dustin Johnson and keeping him out of tournaments or banning him or the majors getting involved and saying, Dustin, you can't play in the Masters where you've won a green jacket, or you can't play in the U.S. Open or the PGA Championship, that becomes, hugely interesting, I think, to the golf fan base worldwide.
Absolutely. So we'll continue to monitor that story. And of course, we'll continue to monitor it through the next week with the AmFam Championship. I'm hoping that those worlds won't collide very much and that the AmFam Championship will have a wonderful return to full stature with the full galleries and the full calendar of events. And of course, the AmFam Championship sponsoring Talking.Golf here on Wisconsin.Golf. The AmFam Championship featuring the Friday night concert at Bree Stevens Field with country music group Lady A and opening acts Boyz II Men and Edwin McCain. Saturday, you have the celebrity foursome following the final group of the day. It'll be Andy North and Brett Favre going up against Julie Inkster and Derek Jeter. Tickets for both the concert and the tournament can be purchased at amfamchampionship.com. And your support of the AmFam Championship goes a long way in the community. Since 2016, the AmFam Championship has raised more than $12.6 million for local charities distributed through the American Family Steve Stricker Foundation. Speaking of team matches, Gary, your thoughts on Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady against Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes?
I have to admit, Rob, I did not watch it. I mean, I saw the highlights. I tuned in and saw the quotes and the highlights. I saw Aaron Rodgers make the clinching putt there for the birdie on the last hole. I did not watch. Did you watch it?
Well, I watched only because there was mayhem at the NCAA championship the last day. So we'll talk about my few days with Harrison Ott over at Greyhawk in Scottsdale. But when Harrison and Vanderbilt lost in the semifinals, and I didn't go back on the last day, but I wanted to watch it. So I started watching. And then all of a sudden, apparently the generator in the production truck overheated and the NCAA championship went dark. And so they started showing the previous day's stuff. And I said, well, I've watched this. I was there. I don't need to see this again. And so I flipped over to TNT and you had JJ Watt and Charles Barkley backing Ernie Johnson on the call. And then, Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady win the first two holes. And I think this is going to be a rout. And quite frankly, Mahomes and Allen weren't even hitting it on the planet. So I thought, this was going to be a rout. And then it got interesting again. I think Mahomes and Allen, went up one, and then Rodgers and Brady won a hole late. It was a 12 hole event, which, number 12, this just seems scripted for the end to be as it was, but Aaron Rodgers still had to make a putt, and it was about a, 10, 12 footer, that he putted second after Brady gave him the line, and it was a great putt. He walked it in. It was great theater. And I think TNT got everything it wanted on a day off from the NBA finals really with not a whole lot of other golf going on, but it was kind of weird. It started at least out in Arizona at a weird time of the day for something, of the stature of the match. I think it was in Vegas. I thought they could have probably played it a little bit later, but they did go to dark anyway. And it was, as these matches have been, it was good entertainment.
You know, John Hawkins, one of my favorite writers, writes for Morning Read, and is a pretty cynical guy. And he's really been hard on these previous incarnations of these matches, basically saying they weren't worth watching. But even he got behind this one and said it was pretty entertaining. So I take it was. And now I sort of regret not watching it. But oh, well, I've seen the highlights. I guess that's good enough.
And I it's good that he said that, because I think, the one dynamic that's different this time, there wasn't a PGA Tour pro paired up with him. And I thought that made it better. I mean,
yeah.
Anytime you turn an event like that into a pro-am, You know, you're expecting the pro to carry the am, and it pretty much goes to script. You know, now you have, you know, people that aren't used to carrying people on a golf course carrying them, and Aaron Rodgers, you could tell, you know, first of all, he wants to be better than Tom Brady, even if Tom Brady is on his team. And I think that's essentially the way it happened, because, you know, Brady was always asking Trevor Immelman, you know, because they were all mic'd up and connected through the earpiece. And, you know, and I mean, every shot Brady was asking Trevor Immelman, what would you do here? And it's like he's trying to gather as much information before hitting the shot. But it was so that was kind of funny. But I like it, because we've seen all these guys like Tony Romo, who we'll probably see at the Ray Fisher, and Steph Curry, who's a little bit busy playing golf right now. But, you know, these are guys who, you know, can hit the ball and are great, you know, great golfers for being very accomplished other sports. And I think it's fun to be able to see them try to do in golf what they've been able to do in their own sports. And that's what we saw the other day. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, I saw a photo of Steph Curry carrying his clubs somewhere to get regripped right before the final started. So he's still thinking about golf. I thought that was pretty good.
Must be a 5-day regrip service. He must think this one's going to be over and four. Although I think they kind of lost that opportunity last night when they lost in the fourth quarter to the Celtics. So to kind of put a bow on our podcast this week, a couple big things going on. The NCAA championship this past week. Harrison Ott really came through with flying colors, especially in match play. His Vanderbilt team was really solid. But, Gary, the top eight teams in the country on the golf stat rankings made it into the eight spots of match play. Unprecedented. And I think it just shows how good college golf is right now.
Yeah, I followed that. I followed pretty closely, Rob, and you did a great job recapping Harrison's final days as a college golfer, and we're really looking forward to see what he does, you know, once he turns pro and gets out there and with the big boys. But yeah, it was really cool that the golf stat rankings had it nailed. So and hats off to Texas for winning the national championship.
Yeah, they were really good, and the day that they knocked out Vanderbilt, it was kind of a culmination of what they'd done the day before. They had the low round on the final round of stroke play, Gary, and the conditions just got, you know, more demanding every day. It played like a U.S. Open type course, which I thought was pretty interesting. I think they could do that on a course in the desert, but they had the green speeds pretty fast. And I really was impressed with the way Harrison stuck to his game plan and was able to just, wait for his opportunities to especially in match play to make a move. And he did. And he said, you know, he wasn't able to, you know, make the turnaround from the NCAAs to this week's Canadian Tour event, but he hopes to play in events 2, 3, and 4 as a professional. And then, of course, we hope to see him defend his title in the Wisconsin State Open at Ozaukee Country Club later this summer in August down in Mequon. So we'll see what happens there. Speaking of that Canadian Tour, there are three guys with Wisconsin ties up there: Jordan Hahn, Thomas Longbella, and George Kneiser. Right now, Jordan Hahn, who had a great opening round, 67, is even par on day two, and is currently T24. Thomas Longbella shot 70 yesterday. He is not yet teed off. And George Kneiser shot 71 yesterday, and he is one over for the day here today. So it's fun to see these guys make their maiden voyage, Gary, in professional golf. And it'll be fun, much like it was back when Steve Stricker first broke in 1990 up north of the border. We have to pay attention to what these guys are doing up there, because I think they've got an opportunity to take advantage of this opportunity.
Yeah, we've got a great crop of young players who have just turned pro or will be turning pro. And you're right, it's kind of like back in the day when Stricker, Kelly, J.P. Hayes, and Kendall came along all at once. We've got a pretty good comparable group right now, with Hunter Eichhorn, Harrison Ott, and the guys you just mentioned. Some of those guys are going to break through. We hope all of them do it, but some of them probably will.
And the great bridge to our calendar to start this week. We've got the AmFam Championship at the end of it, but we'll be busy on Monday and Tuesday. We'll start first, Gary. You'll be monitoring from afar the various U.S. Open final qualifying sites. Hunter Eichhorn, Cameron Huss, Griffin Barella, Patrick Stolpe, Bennett Swavely, Hunter Eichhorn, and a couple others. I'm missing somebody. I got to go back to my list. But most of them going to Columbus, Ohio. And in fact, Griffin Barella and Cameron Huss are going to be playing together with Peter Malnati, a PGA Tour pro, for the 36-hole deal there. And then Ty Kretz down in Florida. Ty Kretz also right. in there. It's a tough day. It's the longest day of golf. Golf Channel will have great coverage of it from, you know, all the venues. For you, Gary, what stands out about the 36-hole U.S. Open final qualifying?
Well, it's such a big step up from the 18-hole locals that these guys got through. Now they're thrown in with, really almost every player in these sectional finals is capable of playing in the U.S. Open, but only a few make it through, as we know. So you're in the field with a bunch of PGA Tour pros. I remember Gary Van Sickle 1 year made it to sectional qualifying and played, or final qualifying as it's called now, and played with a couple of PGA Tour pros and said he was clearly out of his element. And not that these guys will be out of their element, Rob, but I think it'll be a great learning experience. It's going to be tough to get through for all of them. Who knows, one or two might make it, but they'll all learn valuable things about what it's like to play in such a pressure cooker as U.S. Open final qualifying against, you know, some of the best players in the world.
And I think it sets up a number of these guys well for their summer schedules. You know, you've got the college guys who still have eligibility, where, you know, this will probably be the toughest thing they play in all year. And then you've got the guys who will be playing mini tour stuff the rest of the year, trying to Monday qualify. You know, a 36-hole Monday qualifier, a lot different than the 18-holer. But yet I think you can derive confidence from, you know, this marathon qualifying process for the U.S. Open and take it back as you try to chase Korn Ferry opportunities and PGA Tour opportunities here through the summer months. So I think that'll be good. So we'll follow that. And then, of course, it's the WIA State Tournament up at Black Wolf Run and Kohler. We posted the sectional report card this morning. And, Gary, a couple things stood out. First of all, Cassie Pasewik, who is a very accomplished girls golfer, but goes to a high school at Greenfield that doesn't sponsor girls golf. She decided to play on the boys team this spring for the first time. She's a junior, already committed to Loyola of Illinois. And she shot a 2-over par 74 at Wenatchee Golf Course in Menomonee Falls to finish second at the Brookfield Central Sectional and earn one of three individual berths in next week's state tournament. We've had a number of girls who have qualified individually here in the last 10 years. So we've come a long way. I can remember when Molly Shem out of Fort Atkinson wound up going on to play at the University of Northern Iowa. And she was the first. And then Ellie Arkin really turned heads when she won a sectional for Reedsburg in 2008. And so it's kind of neat to see. We've seen Cassie Pasewik get a top 10 finish last year at the State Women's Open. She's got game. It'll be interesting to see what she can do up at Black Wolf Run. Of course, she's played it in the WPGA Players Tour event up there every year.
Rob, I know you'll know the answer to this, but which girl finished highest in the state tournament? Did anyone ever crack like the top 20 in a state once they got to state?
I'm glad you asked that, because as I was doing research after the NCAAs, I went back and looked at Harrison Ott's senior year. And I don't think he made it to state his first 2 years, then did his last two. Harrison finished right behind a girl named Sasha Osteen, Osteen of Manitowoc, who qualified in 2013 and 14. They were both, I think in the top 20, like T18, T19. And I'm not sure if they tied or if Sasha finished one ahead, but I think Harrison shot like 77, 74 to give you an idea of how well Sasha played. There's opportunities. Now, another point to that, though, Gary, is the fact that I believe it's a 10% advantage that the WIA rules give the girls who play in the spring, so that their course is equal to the course the girls play in the fall. It's supposed to be followed throughout the year. I've been told that it isn't always followed to a T. Most courses do have a course rating that's 10% less, at certain Ts. So, that is something, not necessarily an asterisk, but that is a component to the girls playing in the spring. We did have a few other girls that played. Amy Thoney of Lodi came close. I believe Lodi finished third as a team at their sectional, so missed qualifying by one spot. And then Abundant Life had a gal, Mara Baki, who is going to be going on to play some NAIA golf, I think, at Olivet Nazarene next year. And ALCS just missed by a few spots at their sectional. In addition to Cassie Pasuik, some other exciting stuff, Gary DeForest High School outside of Madison, they're going to state with five freshmen in the lineup. I went back in WI record books, programs, tried to, you know, looked at all the rosters. I never found anybody with more than three. Five freshmen playing high school golf and being able to earn five, you know, all five spots in a varsity lineup says something. But to go to state, and they shot a 308 at the Legend at Bergamot to win the Oregon sectional. That to me is one of the great feats that I've ever seen in high school golf. I mean, and I can't wait to see how these guys handle a Black Wolf run. They've got nothing to lose. They've got three more years, don't they?
I smell a dynasty here, Rob. That's really cool. Yeah, looking at your story right now on Wisconsin.gov, that is outstanding. And one more point on the girls, Rob. June 23rd, so 20 days from now, is the 50-year anniversary of Title IX being passed, being signed by President Nixon and passed into law. And it's really, really cool to see these young ladies, you know, qualify for the boys' tournament. But back to your point on DeForest, Rob, that's outstanding. That's fun.
And then, of course, you find, you know, these, you know, because the sectional day is, you know, if the U.S. Open sectional or the final qualifying is the longest day of golf, I think the WIA sectional days are the most nerve-wracking for these kids. There's only two team spots. There's only three individuals who are not on those teams that get to go from each sectional. Some are more, you know, weighted than others, you know, loaded with good teams. You know, we've talked about that. Sometimes you go with a shot that you don't expect to hit. And young guy down at Wauwatosa East West was able to do that. Ben Sobolewski finishes birdie, but on the final hole, he hits a 56-degree wedge from 102 yards to within a foot of the cup, a tap-in birdie, and they beat Franklin by one shot to avoid a playoff for the final team berth. That to me is, we see something like that every year at one of the sectionals, Division I, Division II, Division III. They rallied from 10 down with three holes to go to win that. And it was mainly the work of Ben Sobolewski and then a freshman, their number five golfer, Will Gulrahani. Will just kind of, Coach Martin Minnick said, just kind of stuck to the plan and stayed patient. And he had a great finish to his round and was able to beat his guy by about five. I think Ben beat his guy by seven. And then the two guys in the middle lost by about a shot to their corresponding numbers. And it just made for a great showdown. But, you know, there's winners, there's, you know, losers, if you want to call them that, teams that don't go on, individuals that don't go on. But, you know, I think the neat thing about this is the same process that's been in place for the better part of 100 years of WI boys golf. And it never gets old. It sometimes gets disappointing. It sometimes gets frustrating, but it never gets old. There's always some good competition.
Yeah, and something like what Ben did, knocking a wedge close and tapping in and for a huge stroke like that, that's something that he'll remember for the rest of his life. No matter what he does, no matter if he stops playing golf or goes on to play on the PGA Tour, that is a moment in time that he will never, ever forget. And that's what's so cool about high school sports, Rob.
And we also had a hole-in-one at the sectional level, Gary. Our friend Logan Tudor out of Oconomowoc, he uses an 8-iron from 168 to ace the 8th hole at River Club in Mequon. He misses qualifying by two shots, but his teammate, a freshman named Aiden Parent, he goes in a playoff over Bodie King, who's a real good golfer out of Heartland Arrowhead, showing you the depth of that Mequon sectional. And Bodie finished T25 at state last year. So we're seeing a lot of freshmen in the state tournament this year, five on one team. Waterford sending two freshmen individually. It's a game that through the work of the WPGA and others, these kids are getting better, younger, and we're reaping the benefits, and we'll see how it all plays out at Black Wolf Run. We talked last week, Gary, it can be a little bit more intimidating standing on a tee box at Black Wolf Run than some of the courses they've played to this point. But you know what? The fact that they got there says a lot about these kids.
And you'll be there to chronicle it, Rob, right? Monday and Tuesday?
Monday and Tuesday. I don't think all of us tough a job as Jim Kellis walking that course to get the photos that you'll see on Wisconsin.gov. I'll be sitting at the first tee taking pictures, but then I'll just mosey on over to the scoring tents and try to figure out, you know, who's the story of the day. And again, talk about full, you know, returning to normal, first time since 2019, all the teams at one site, morning wave, I believe first day it's divisions two and three early, and then division one, division one early and two and three in the afternoon, and then they flip the second day, and division one finishes in the late wave. So a lot of golf. Then on to the state women's match play, which gets going on Monday, but I'll be there Wednesday to check out the semifinals and finals. Then Gary will get together at University Ridge on Thursday, maybe do our podcast then, really kind of breaking down the AmFam Championship, and then we'll settle in for a great weekend of PGA Tour Champions Golf. How does that sound?
That sounds good, Rob. Sounds like a plan.
All right. For Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez, this has been Talking.Golf, sponsored by the 2022 American Family Insurance Championship in Madison. Wisconsin's stop on the PGA Tour Champions is back. It's next week, June 10th through the 12th at University Ridge Golf Course in Madison, with full galleries and a full schedule, including the return of the Friday night concert series at Bree Stevens Field, featuring country music group Lady A with opening acts Boyz II Men and Edwin McCain. Then there's the Saturday Celebrity Foursome. You can see Andy North and Brett Favre take on Derek Jeter and Julie Inkster. They'll be in the last group of the day following the leaders in the tournament. And you can get your tickets for both the concert and the tournament at amfamchampionship.com. Since 2016, the AmFam Championship has raised more than $12.6 million for local charities distributed through the American Family Steve Stricker Foundation. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.